Welcome back, everyone. Pickers Market, episode 116. This is going to be a fantastic show. We got the big boss man in house, Mike Binger.
It seems like we just started this podcast and we're up to 116 episodes. That's roughly 2 years here, a little bit more, right?
It's crazy.
It's incredible. And I think I've been on like five or six of them or something.
Yeah, just before the show started, we're like, Mike, he goes, 116? I said, yeah, right. You've been on probably a handful of them.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Well, good job. I mean, I think we're gaining a lot of traction. It seems like more and more people are watching and listening all the time, right?
For sure.
It's good.
Yep. We got Lisa, as usual.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And John. He's probably been here about four or five times now, too.
All right, yeah. John. You and I are kind of in the same boat, huh? Okay.
Well, one's got a little more experience than the other, but so.
Oh, John's an up-and-comer in our investment team. Sure. I like it.
It's going to be a good show. Before we get started, we'll do our two truths and a lie. We're going to do it on Costa Rica because Mike and I just got back from the Grand Gal. Yeah. We'll get to that in here in a second, but we'll start with two truths and a lie on Costa Rica. So let's start it out. A, Costa Rica is north of the Panama Canal. So challenges everybody's geography here a little bit. B, Intel has been one of Costa Rica's largest foreign investors for decades.
Hmm.
Or C, Costa Rica has no stock exchange of its own.
Hmm.
Binger's going.
Binger's already in thought.
So we'll start with him. Then we'll go to John.
Okay,
after
I'm going
to
go two truths. I know that Costa Rica is. I feel it's north of the Panama Canal.
All right.
I have never heard of a Costa Rican stock exchange, so I'm going to say A and B are truths, and C is a lie.
I like it, John. What kind of you got any difference from the big boss man, or yeah? What do you got?
Yeah, I think A should hopefully be the freebie. I'm pretty confident on that one.
Oh, that was a trick one, I thought, but maybe not. Everybody's confident on it.
And then I know a lot of the Latin American countries don't have their own stock exchanges, so I'm leaning towards that one being true, and I'm going to go with B as the lie.
Mm. Oh.
Okay.
I'm also certain on A. I think not whole Costa Rica is north of Panama. I think it kind of dips down a little bit because it does like a little sling. I think most of the country is north, I think. Okay. But yeah, I think that's semantics here. Intel has been one of the, I have no idea. Why would that be?
It's a little challenging because we got to do it market related. That's right. Why two of the three are market related.
And Costa Rica has no stock. I never heard like Binger of a Costa Rican stock exchange, but I think they have. You know what? Let's switch it up a little bit. I go with C as the lie.
C is the lie. A, Costa Rica is north. So you guys are correct. Mm-hmm. B is also true.
Okay.
Mm. And Costa Rica does have a stock exchange, which shocked me as well.
So they're all true.
So that was where the false one is. It says no stock exchange. So that was
Costa Rica has no stock exchange.
But it has.
They do.
Mm-hmm.
So that was false. So B is the is
no C.
Oh, okay.
No stock exchange.
Okay,
but so that's false. Have, yeah. So they do have one.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So
I've never heard of that either. Yeah, it's like.
Well, I think you mentioned earlier that you didn't think too many Latin American, but surprisingly, there's more than I thought.
Okay,
but there's not too many companies on them.
Okay. What do you know the name of it?
It's like Bola Vista Nacional something.
Or Costa Rica.
Sounds okay. Costa Rican.
Yeah. As soon as we're done here, I'm going to go look that up and
he's do a fact check again. Like he's pulling a lease on me.
Tyler's usually doing the fact check on us too. He does not trust me a single bit every time.
Anyway, so you guys got the geography right, which I didn't exactly for sure know if it was north or south of Panama Canal, but it is north of it. Anyway, the reason we're talking about Costa Rica is Mike and I just got back. Mm-hmm. Mike, we just had an event down there. You want to talk a little bit about it and kind of
explain? Yeah, so Gradient had our Grand Gala event down in Costa Rica. Beautiful location, Four Seasons on the beach down there. It's wonderful.
It's luxurious.
It was hot and humid, but if it's going to be hot and humid, you might as well be close to a beach. And they had several pools, so that was good. But what it is it's kind of a rewards and get together meeting for production. And it's our top 25 producing firms that are invited to this event. So all told, all in, it was roughly about 80 people. Many of the advisors brought their families with and their kids. It was, I'm going to say a great three, 4 days. Got a lot of chances to kind of mingle and have dinner and sit by the pool and talk a little business and, you know, build relationships and all those kind of things. But I heard nothing but positivity on the location, the event, how things are going at Gradient Investments. So it seems like everything is pretty good right now for the moment. So it was a very fun event.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, you mingling with advisors and their family. There's fun activities all the way from catamarans to zip lines to
jet skis
and beach time and pool time. We did have a business meeting for 3-4 hours. So we squeezed that in there.
Squeeze as well. A little business in there too.
But it is, again, those are our, 20 to 25 of our top advisors we work with, which is fantastic to get to know them a little bit better. They had all kinds of events. One thing that did surprise me, on a farewell evening, we do a little bit of kind of, who won the pitcher award, this and that, but which I've never seen before, but I guess people are starting to do these at wedding stuff. They had basically a pop-up tattoo artist there. So
I feel I know where this is going.
No, that's
one of you came back with a little souvenir.
That's completely up to you, but it's like, so of the, I think there was like technically almost 85 people there. 22 of the 85 attendants got a tattoo. Can you believe that?
Yes. I didn't know it was that many.
Anybody you know in particular, Mike?
I made a very spontaneous decision. I did get my first tattoo down there.
Wow, where's the applause button? He got one of those.
It's hard to see. But and it is small.
It's on his forearm.
But it's something kind of near and dear to my heart. And it just kind of came to me. It's really a tattoo tribute to, some high school friends I have. And I started out with the thought of it. And then I went to, I actually used Gemini from Google, the AI.
Oh, you designed it yourself.
I designed it myself. I started out and through several iterations, I came up with the image I want, brought it to the tattoo guy. He said, I can do that. And lo and behold, about 20 minutes later, it was on my arm. So it's kind of exciting, kind of fun. I tell you what, if I hadn't been in the moment there, I probably would have never got one back here in Minneapolis. But lo and behold, now I have one. So that was a fun pop-up tent.
Do you think it'll be the last?
Well, it definitely was the first and probably will be the last, but stay tuned. You never know.
That was exciting though. I was just shocked at the number of people. It was fun, even if you weren't getting one, to fun to watch because there's plenty of people that had them. So they're getting their other ones. And there was a couple that got their first tattoo. So it was, I enjoyed watching it. I did not get one, but
Keith,
I'm too scared of the needles. I don't know if I could take the pain. So,
and you know what? Everyone goes, it's going to hurt. It doesn't hurt at all. Mm.
Really? Okay.
Mm-mm. That's good to know.
Yeah. And you decided for a very prominent
It's a good spot.
Space and spot.
It's kind of right underneath the inside of my elbow. So,
it sounds like he's hiding.
Yeah, I can kind of decide if people want to see it or not, if I want it to be out there or not.
All right.
Okay.
let's jump into some kind of more investment related stuff. The Fed meeting today. So we always like to do the day of the Fed, some little bit of predictions of what's going on. And especially when this is, the new Fed chairman's first event, first FOMC meeting and kind of.
But it's the second one, right?
Well, but this is the one that I guess is
the first real one
coming out party, kind of his full 6 weeks of terms. But Lisa, we'll start with you. What do you think is going to happen at the meeting and kind of tell us where the odds are right now as well?
I think the odds are for a rate hike at 31% and for a put at 96%. I think they will stay put. The interesting thing, though, is, and we see that in a market that's basically a coin flip, the market is very undecided of what it will be. And I think that is already, since Kevin Warsh took over 6 weeks ago, what we already see the changes that the new Fed chair brought, that he shortened up dramatically the commentary, the press conference. He plans to do more changes going forward, so less forward guidance, less outlook. So giving the market less heads up of where they're going and what they're doing with different data points. He also installed different committees from outsiders, very qualified professional outsiders, experts, to being able to look at the Fed of how they are viewing the economy, of what they're doing, how they are commenting to the public and seeing if there are any improvements to be made, if the Fed needs to change some pace. So there's a lot of changes, but I think the most important one that we see with the uncertainty of the market, of investors, where it's going, is nobody knows because they do not hint anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that overall can vote for a little bit more volatility because it's basically a wild card of what happens today.
For sure. John, you got anything to add?
Yeah, I agree. I think that they'll probably stay put. I think as long as kind of the data allows him, he's not going to try to rock the boat too much at the start here. And I do agree that the less guidance will probably lead to more volatility, but I think that's probably a good thing. So the market doesn't have kind of that Fed put to fall back on to say, oh, the Fed will step in and save us.
Yeah. Mike, do you got anything to add?
Yeah, I think, you know, we have a new Fed chairman, as Lisa mentioned. And I think he's a Fed chairman that has a bias towards cutting interest rates. But I don't think he can right now because inflation sits a little bit over 4%. So I think he is, he's going to kind of unveil his long-term bias to cut rates, but I think he has to make no changes in this meeting.
Yeah, he's kind of toe the line. I agree. Mm-hmm. And everybody's on. I mean, that's kind of what the, you know, the odds are saying that, you know, 70% of the people are saying that they're going to stay where they're at. And I do think that's where they're at. What I do find interesting, if you look at the full year, though, we, going back up and going into this year, the Fed was kind of predicted of doing 2 to 3 cuts. And then if my co-partner here was here, Tyler, him and I always tease each other about he's still in the camp of 3 cuts, which I think that ship
has sailed. He's getting quieter and quieter.
Yeah, he's getting quieter and quieter about that. Where I thought this year would be no cuts or maybe 1 at best. The odds, the current kind of, you know, if you look at the CME, kind of what they're predicting is basically it's only 10% odds of staying where we're at now. And the rest is basically a 50 basis point hike is 50% chance. So that's, what do you think of that, Mike, of if we get a 50 basis point hike between now and year end? What happens to that, I guess? What are the implications?
I think if they have to hike, it's because inflation is continues to creep up. And we know the market doesn't like inflation and it doesn't like higher interest rates. So I think if that is the case, I think we're going to have to, the market's going to be kind of on a little bit of on a rocky table for a while.
Yeah. John, you got any insight there, especially kind of the balancing act between, you know, the jobs number and mm-hmm. inflation? Where are you falling down the rest of the year?
Yeah, I'd lean towards hikes now because in Warsh's opening meeting, he made a very strong stance against inflation. And if inflation continues to creep up like the trend is showing, he's going to kind of have to back up that stance. Otherwise, the market's not going to react very well.
Yeah. Lisa, you got any kind of when you look out the rest of the year and kind of where you think they're going to be? Are they going to stay where they're at? Or are they going to lower or potentially do what consensus is, that 50 basis point hike?
Yeah, I think we will probably not see 2 hikes of what the market is thinking at the moment, probably 1. But I think they're staying put because with the last and we get PC, which is the Fed's preferred inflation number. We get that tomorrow. So that is after the decision. But when we saw 2 weeks ago, we got CPI, Consumer Price Index, as well as PPE, which is the wholesale level, which shows kind of what comes down to the consumer level, like one step above, which was cooler than expected. Most reason for that is because oil prices came down in June, mostly because of a ceasefire and kind of moving towards negotiations, which again, we are back at square one. So that is off the table.
Yeah,
now.
Oil's been a little volatile.
I filled up my gas tank just last night.
Yeah.
And I have a car that uses premium, but it was $5.19 a gallon. Oh, highest I've paid.
You got to go to Costco.
Yeah, you got to go to Costco. Exactly. Yeah. Like Keith and I. And I think but at least the lower inflation reports last month give them at least a little bit of time and buys them a little bit of time because the next inflation decision is not in August, it's in September.
Yep.
So we will get a lot of new reports until then, but August is off the table for our interest rate decision. So the next potential is September, which is a long time specifically at the moment. We do not know what's happening in the Middle East. But I also think even if oil prices are coming down, we have still a lot of these second effect impacts on inflation that are still not flowing through completely, right? Mm. Even if oil goes back to normal, until supply is back to normal in the Strait and in the Red Sea, it still takes a lot of time.
Yeah, I agree, Lisa. I do think, you know, it's the timing of when they potentially would raise. I'm still standing at they don't do anything on the interest rates, but if they do, I'm more inclined that it'll be a raise than a cut. And the other thing, for interesting timing wise, I think it's still political. It would be after the elections because I think Trump may have a heart attack if Warsh raises rates in front of the.
That's true,
right?
So, but these higher oil prices. I mean, I think higher oil prices give companies an excuse to raise prices.
Yeah,
you know, they're coming and said, look, we have to raise our prices because of the price of oil. Mm-hmm. Companies at the end of the day, companies do want to raise prices because it helps, you know, their markets, sales. Yeah.
But it's like higher oil prices, and prices take the elevator up, but the stairs down.
Yeah,
we saw that with gas prices, not
it coming empowers back down. Higher oil empowers companies to be able to raise prices, mm-hmm. and that fuels inflation. So, but we're going to hear later on, I understand, from our oil expert here on what the thoughts are there. So,
yeah, we'll jump around here a little bit. So now we're going to talk quickly on kind of the Mag 7 has now become the Leg 7, and kind of you're starting to see a rotation. You know, those are the names that have been working for, you know, multi-years, you know, and driving the market. You know, they're the top 7-10 names are anywhere from 25% to 35% of the market. Now those leaders now have become laggard, which is interesting that the market, the S&P 500, still up, you know, 8-10% depending on the time period you're looking at. So to have those names actually being down, and last week we saw Tesla was down 18%, Meta 8%, Google 8%, Amazon 6%. Those are the big boys now. And part of the reason they're down because of CapEx. Mike, you got any thoughts on kind of why the Mag 7 has now become the Leg 7 and kind of maybe a little prediction going forward? Will they remain the Leg 7?
Yeah. So look, in 24 and 25 and actually the beginning of 26, I mean, the markets were being led by the Mag 7. And we all know the names. It's Google and Meta and Amazon and Tesla and Netflix and all these. A couple of the Mag, Microsoft is in there, but a couple of the Mag 7 have stumbled fundamentally. And I'm going to say that's Tesla and I'm going to say that's for Netflix. Sure. You know, so they're a big part of this Mag 7, but also, you know, the pendulum always swings a little further on these, you know, on the rotation in the market. And I think it just swung a little high on the valuation on the Mag 7. You know, there's just a big segment in the market that loves momentum and just keeps buying as long as the stocks are working. So there's been a little unwind there. And it seems like they've gotten out of the Mag 7 into the semiconductor sector because now they went from the companies that are using AI. They've rotated into the companies that are building data centers and the building blocks and the picks and shovels of AI. And that's semiconductors, Caterpillar, a lot of different companies. And they ran those companies up. And now we're actually seeing a little bit of an unwind there. So what I like in general is that, you know, despite the Mag 7, despite kind of the data center companies, the market is still up, which means to me that the market is broadening out. So, I mean, you know, the Mag 7, you still had 493 other stocks out there in the S&P 500.
You do.
So they all had room to run. And then you had maybe a group of 20 to 25 kind of pick and shovel data center stocks. And now they're unwinding, but the market is still doing okay. And that's because, you know, in my opinion, the, you know, the market is, you know, follows the economy and corporate earnings. We all know those are good. So I don't think the Mag 7 is going to be a leader, you know, for the rest of the year. I don't think it's going to be a detractor either. I think it's just going to kind of follow the market because it has corrected and it'll stay there. I think the broadening of the market is what's going to lead us higher.
Nice. John, you guys have thoughts on the Leg 7 and kind of maybe Apple as well in that, you know?
Yeah. I think Apple has been kind of the one that's standing out from the Mag 7. Last year, everybody kept talking on CNBC and everywhere, Apple has to do something with AI. They're falling behind. And now everybody else is struggling. And Apple's kind of approach of not being the innovators, but doing it best is kind of paying off. And I think it's kind of being rewarded by being that one Mag 7 that's kind of remote from AI. And they're just going to incorporate whichever company wins the kind of the AI race. So yeah. I think that's
interesting point. Yeah.
Differentiating Apple right now.
Lisa?
Yeah, I think to Binger's point on the broadening out, I mean, even with the Mach 7 lagging, and they were driving the bus over the last couple of years and their weight within the S&P, and still they're mostly down, but the index is up 10%. And I think that shows there is nice evidence of the broadening out, kind of sets us all up for a little bit more balanced portfolio returns. It's certainly good for us active managers to find opportunities out there outside of the big boys and to find really other great companies. And they are finally kind of joining the game here. But I think overall, and we saw that after Alphabet reported Google last week, which was the first Mach 7, the first big boy where we were very focused on the CapEx spend, and they raised CapEx. They had a 82% increase in their Google Cloud revenue. So that was generally was blowout earnings. Mm-hmm. But investors kind of were a little chittery, or not a little, a little much, because they again raised CapEx to about $205 billion just for this year. Together with the others, it's about $750 or nearly $800. We hear more about that today and tomorrow. Should cap $1 trillion next year. And I think that shows that, and my question here is, okay, investors are very nervous about increasing CapEx. Are these hyperscalers even increasing CapEx expectations more? And hyperscalers and other AI-related stocks sold off. But the question I'm asking myself, what would change that narrative right now for the market? Given that monetization is not yet there yet, so we cannot expect anything of the reports talk about monetization is finally here, that's still out. But what would change the narrative? And we can expect probably Microsoft, Meta, Amazon reporting today and tomorrow also with CapEx increases most likely. So again, might drive stocks then lower again. But what would help here? And the other part of the coin would be, okay, they lower guidance on CapEx or leave it unchanged, which I think would also be a bad news for investors. And they would also sell it off, right? So I think what is the short-term reprieve here? What do investors want to see right now outside of monetization that is not yet feasible? I was like, I don't know what would change the narrative here.
Yeah, no, it's kind of where I'm at too, asking this question of, you know, Mag 7, Leg 7. And I think it's, you do have to pick stocks. One surprised me is Apple. I mean, Apple, I think it's, I'm not sure their plan was they wanted to invest in AI. They messed it up. And by messing it up, I think they've kind of got the fortune of not getting this arms race on CapEx. So I think that's, I don't know, sure how much that was intentional versus doesn't matter why, but I think they're sitting pretty good. Now, I do think though, I'll, you know, making a prediction going forward that could hurt Apple, not this year, but down the road, that they didn't innovate in AI and they're kind of going to be beholden to somebody with that AI technology because they haven't won on the CapEx race. I do think what the market's telling you, especially with these memory, you know, and semiconductor stocks selling off recently pretty aggressively, that maybe one of these big guys actually hold CapEx flat, or at least what they are, without increasing it like Google just did last week, or Alphabet. If that happens, I you know, those memory storage chip stocks, I think, continue to underperform. And I think that's where you could maybe get some performance out of, I don't know if it's going to be a Meta or a Amazon or Microsoft, maybe going into year end. I do think Mike's probably right as a whole, the category. I would think that if I had to pick over or under performing in line with the market, I think they slightly outperform, but it'll be a handful. Yep. It won't be as a group. It'll be three or four outperforming and a couple underperforming.
Yep. So I think AI is a thing. I think all these companies have incredibly smart executive teams. I think they understand that AI is a thing and it's going to be a thing for many decades going forward. So that's why you're seeing all this big spending. So I don't think this big spending is going to stop or decrease for a while. Yeah. You know, they've committed enormous amounts of money. I think that's going to drive semiconductor earnings for 2 to 3 years at least. So these things just got ahead of themselves, in my opinion. The valuations got a little bit ahead of themselves. But you look at companies like Micron that makes memory chips, or SanDisk that makes memory chips. I mean, they trade at four or five time multiples going forward. So I think there's just a little bit of unwind here, but I think we're coming close to that. And I think people are going to be right back into this theme again, because I think AI is going to help, is going to be a productivity booster for corporate America and for individuals and for the economy as a whole. And these companies, you know, the ones we talk about here are at the forefront of that. And they see it and they're planning for it long term, and the spending will continue, and the earnings will flow to the picks and shovel guys too.
So yeah. Do you think we just have to go through this elevated volatility right now because investors are not happy with lower guidance on CapEx? They're not happy with higher guidance on CapEx. They're generally not happy. So do you think that will change once we see monetization coming up?
Well, define monetization. I don't know what that means.
Until we see kind of some return on investments on all of this crazy spend.
I don't think you're going to see any. I mean, look, all these companies, they have enormous cash flow right now. And they've always had enormous cash flow. So I don't think you're going to be able to say, you know, Google is making this much money off Gemini or these programs, those kind of things. I think it's just a part of the whole is this AI evolution. So I think these companies will continue to have big time cash flows. And right now they're, instead of returning it to shareholders, they're spending it on AI, which I think will help them, you know, grow in the future as they always have. So, you know, when I hear this word monetization, and that's the reason I ask, I don't know what that really means. But I just think that all these companies are going to incorporate AI. They're going to be the leaders in it, and other companies are going to look to them on how to adopt it.
Yeah. All right. Changing gears one last time here. Mm-hmm. We'll get to energy because it's been very volatile. It's important for investors to look at. And John, you're kind of our latest energy guy around here, and price of oil. Once you talk about kind of, you know, the price of oil is beginning of the year was below $70. I think it was below $65 coming into the year. We've had Iran conflict, almost got to 120, 115, dropped to below 70, and now we're at 90. Kind of give me your thoughts, kind of how we should be looking at oil and why it's so important.
Yeah, I think the market has been kind of eager to reprice oil on any news of a ceasefire or any good news coming out of the whole Iran issue. But when you kind of look at it, even outside of Iran, there's in the Red Sea, there's the Houthis now that have nearly cut the flow of oil through the Red Sea in half. And a lot of the refiners are shut down in Russia because of Ukraine attacks. So we're kind of seeing a lot of different issues all happening at the same time. And oil isn't something that once we come to a deal, it can just start up again. We have to build up the pressure in the wells and heat up the refineries again. So it's something that has a long time to kind of fall back down to that regular kind of level that we see at 60. So I think we still stay elevated from here. Most analysts that I've seen have been projecting above the forward curve. So it's kind of staying up in that.
Oh, stop there. What does that mean, above the forward curve?
Yep. So there's market determined prices on forward agreements on oil. So I can go and agree to buy a barrel of oil for 3 months out, 4 months out, and then that's kind of
the price you're going to pay.
So those curves are kind of predicting the oil is going to stay elevated, maybe even move a little higher in the short term.
Nope, it's downward sloping, but most analysts, and I agree that they're a little bit too far downward sloping, and that can be to various different things, like companies just wanting to hedge out their bets and play safe. So I do think oil remains kind of in that high 70 area for going forward for a little bit.
Yeah. Lisa, if that's the case, I don't know if you agree or disagree, if oil is going to remain in that more elevated in that high 70s, what do you think? Is that necessarily detrimental to the economy, or is that okay at that level? And then what level do you think it's really a headwind for the overall economy?
Well, we saw it when the Iran conflict initially started with oil spiking to 126, I think was the highest. And I mean, some economists call for 200 a barrel, right? So we avoided that worst case scenario. And I think multiple reasons were responsible to kind of get that blow kind of over with. A little bit with some scratches, but not with much, is because there were some strategic reserves released that helped a little bit. demand was coming down. There were some increases in oil production outside of the region. I think what happens now when the war drags on, I think a lot of these things, a lot of discussion is not there anymore. The oil reserves are at decades low in the US. It hasn't been lower in, I think, in 60 years. Mm-hmm. Europe is exactly the same. At some point, it needs to be filled up, especially for winter. All of these demand that came down already came down. Production that was increased outside of the strait was already increased, and that is on its limit. So I think if that drags on now, a lot of that cushion is gone. Mm-hmm. So I think that can certainly set us up for more headwinds going forward, and why we might see a little bit higher prices for a little bit longer.
Yeah, and remember that, you know, with all this going on, that OPEC actually increased their production, mm-hmm. and we're still sitting here at these levels right now. So I think John's right that, you know, things will stay elevated for a while.
How much of an impact do you think that's going to be on the economy? At what level do you think it kind of starts to really become
I think once you're over $80 a barrel, I mean, it'll be painful, you know, between 70 and I think a great balance is between $60 and $70 a barrel. You know, I think consumers can absorb $60 to $70 a barrel. I think the, you know, energy economy can get a profit in that type of oil. But once you get over 70 and start hitting 75, you know, gas prices go up, companies raise prices, all these things, which is a headwind to the economy. So I wouldn't be concerned if it goes over 80, I think.
Yeah, I think over 80 longer term. 80 is uncomfortable. And then you get, if you go over 90 for a sustainable period, I think that becomes painful. Mm-hmm. So, but I think, you know, I think we're all on the same page that we think we're just going to get hopefully back to that high 70s, mm-hmm. $80 range. But I think that's manageable. You start getting above that, it gets to be mm-hmm. a little bit of a headwind. So that's kind of where we're at with oil, and that's why we watch it. Last thing, we'll shift gears again. We'll talk a little fun stuff. Obviously, when Mike and I were in Costa Rica, it was hot. We come back to Minnesota, I think it got even...
It's hot.
It was even hotter.
Yeah.
So do you guys enjoy, are you fans of the hot weather and then summer plans? I know one of our co-hosts here is going to be gone, and what summer's like in Austria, so... Go ahead, Lisa. Do you like the hot weather?
No, I'm not really a fan. You know, I live in the 70s. Same with oil prices, right? 70 is fine. And for me, the range of 70s Fahrenheit is kind of my sweet spot, 70 to 80. That's way too hot and humid for me, especially for Minnesota. It feels too much, right? I'm heading out to Austria tomorrow evening, and they have a new heat wave rolling in. They had a new heat wave rolling in. They have also wildfires like we Minnesota. We experienced it from northern Minnesota and from Canada. They have it currently in France and Spain, like big troubles. Heat waves, the difference is though, they don't have ACs as much as the US. No. So that will be an interesting travels. But well,
you try and suffer through it, okay?
Yeah, I will. Okay. I will.
John?
Yeah.
Are you a fan of the heat or any summer plans coming up yet?
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same page with Lisa. When it gets into the 90s, it's too hot and I burn really easily. So that's not fun either. But as for summer plans, not really. I have my CFA exam coming up in a couple of weeks here. So that's kind of
sucked up a large
part of my summer.
Okay.
All right. Good.
Mike?
I'm a fan of hot weather. I mean, in Minnesota, you know, I have a place on a lake. So, you know, I like to get out in the boat and in the water and all those things. And June was very disappointing because it was kind of cool and rainy and all that. Didn't get that chance. So when I see July is hot and August looks like it's shaping up to be warm, I'm okay with that. I can deal with it. I mean, at work here, we're air conditioned and just
fine. And they cool it here too.
Nice. Yeah, they cool it so much that you need a jacket, actually.
So I don't really have any more summer travel plans. You know, as you know, Keith and I were both in Lisa. We were in the Gradient Gala in Mexico, and then Keith and I were in at the Grand Gala in Costa Rica. So I've had plenty of travel so far. I'm looking forward just to an August of being around. Actually,
yeah, I second everything that you just said. I enjoy the hot weather. I live on a lake, so I jump in that, and I'm enjoying just August to kind of be around and spend some time on the lake and kids are home, so
yeah,
it'll be a good rest of summer.
Good, good. I do want to highlight one thing before we sign off here is that, you know, I think, you know, the investment team has made a concerted effort to add to their bench strength this summer. I feel like we've done that. I feel like we've got a really good team. And I mean, a great example of this is, you know, we can, you know, bring in John today here. And John, you've been with us roughly a year, right?
Yep, I've been with Gradient as a whole going on 2 years now.
But the investment team?
The investment team.
Yeah, right, yeah, you know, and John comes in and, you know, he's been looking at our energy sector portfolio. He does a lot of, you know, background work for us as far as reporting and all that. But, you know, to see a young analyst like this come in and, you know, give great thoughts on, you know, on oil and the energy economy and all that, that's fun to see that the investment team is getting more and more talent all the time.
We're going to start mixing up going forward here a little bit since we have more people. Yeah, we'll like more chairs to sit around. So we'll make sure it's exciting for all you listeners out there. So. Yeah.
I mean, the point being is an investment team, we can't have a bunch of old guys like us gangle.
Yeah.
I've always been of the opinion you need to barbell your talent on the investment team. And I think we're certainly do that, you know, with Lisa and, you know, I won't say your age, Lisa, but I'll just, I'll just point it out that you're younger than Keith 20, and I,
25.
You know, and John obviously is. So I mean, I feel we have strong talent that's been around for a long time, but we also have really strong talent that's up and coming too.
Sure do. All right, everyone, like and subscribe.
All right.
Investing involves the risk of loss. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be regarded as personalized investment advice or relied upon for investment decisions. Jeremy Bryan, Tyler Eligard, Keith Gangle, Lisa Schreiber, and David Ama are employees of Gradient Investments, LLC, and may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. All opinions expressed by them and their guests are solely their own opinion and do not reflect the opinion of Gradient Investments, LLC. Please consult your independent investment advisor before making any investment decisions. The information herein is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the sole basis for making an investment decision. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. For more information, please request a copy of Gradient Investments ADV Part 2A. Gradient Investments LLC is an SEC registered investment advisor.